Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning and welcome. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabigian.
And Dave and I are two of the partners at the Herzog Law Firm, conveniently located over at Corporate Woods. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs and Kingston, New York. And we are here to talk to you each Saturday morning here at Magic 590 and answer your questions about estate planning, asset protection planning, Medicaid applications, estate administration, beneficiary designations, all those good things that people get confused about and aren't sure how to do. If you got a question this morning, Dave and I would love to talk to you through here. The number in the studio is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the local calling area, you can reach us toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. So are you staying cool, David?
I am. I was thinking about how we're going to invade the Dave Kopeck show after us and just stay here in the air conditioning and then get into the whole country music portion of the day and just, we're going to stay
country
here all day.
On this station? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that. I'll start listening.
Yeah.
I love country music.
You could start by listening today because we're going to stay in this air conditioning
okay.
the entire day.
Well, listen, stay cool, stay hydrated.
Yeah, be careful out
be
there.
Be careful going out. And for heaven's sakes, if you know an older person in your neighborhood or in your building or a disabled person, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to check on them once or twice, make sure they got water and, you know, food, and that especially their air conditioner's working, because older people are extremely susceptible to heat stroke.
So, Harry, are you saying that I should check in on you later on today?
would you do that, David?
That's a low blow.
Well,
I apologize. That was pretty bad.
The tasteless
even
joke
for you.
The tasteless joke about my age. I was walking around the office yesterday afternoon, and as Ben said earlier, today is the 50th anniversary of Neil Armstrong's first steps on the moon on July 20th, 1969. And I walk around the office yesterday afternoon, and my contemporary, one of my partners, who's actually a couple years older, has been away for a few days, and I decided that I probably was the only person in the office who actually saw the actual real moon landing on television. I know you didn't, because more than a decade after that.
I was six
you were
and a
six.
Half. Yeah, and I remember seeing it. I do remember seeing it.
Well,
so.
I must tell you, I was a junior in college.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Someone out there has a calculator. They're doing the math.
A back abacus.
Also the summer of Woodstock, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Woodstock as well. I did not go to Woodstock. You know, of all the people who went to Woodstock, who said they went to Woodstock went, there would have been 5 million people there.
I'm trying to picture you with you know, shoulder-length hair. I don't know if I could do it.
Well, it's funny because I did have it. And in fact, I was in the Army Reserves in the 1970s because when they reinstituted the draft lottery in 1970, in the thick of the Vietnam War, my birthday was number one, the first one out of the hat. It's the only lottery I have ever won.
Yeah, lucky you.
Never won the Powerball. I never won the lotto, but I won the draft lottery.
There you
yes,
go.
Yes, I did. And but I used to wear a wig to Army Reserves. I had a nice crew-cut wig that we were allowed to wear if you had long hair in the Army Reserves in those days. Yeah.
Is this real? Seriously?
Really?
I'm telling you for sure. And on a day like this...
So you would put your long hair underneath your...
Tie my hair back, you know, and or pin it up with bobby pin and put the wig over it and go to my reserve meetings from all weekend
cool.
and 2 weeks up in Fort Drum.
Very interesting.
In Watertown, yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, we digress.
Yeah, we did digress. That's all right. Well, I will check in on you later is the point. You weren't kidding. It's going to be hot, hot, hot. And you got to be careful. I mean, look, the horses aren't running today. That tells you something.
Yeah.
We do have a lot going on in the office, Harry. I know it's been hot outside. It's been very, very busy inside our office.
We've had a real busy June and July.
Yeah.
Very busy. Our line of work in estate planning, elder law, Medicaid planning, it's not seasonal. It's not related to summer, fall, winter, or even frankly, even economic gyrations.
You don't stop getting old during the summer. You don't.
It's true.
People are more active, and sometimes that activity leads to them needing to go to the hospital and then rehab and et cetera, et cetera. And that's why we kind of always, it feels like every weekend when we're on the radio, keep beating the drum of plan in advance, because you never know what's going to happen, and get those trusts set up and make sure, for crying out loud, you put stuff in it.
You were talking earlier before we came on the air about the planning aspects of planning for home care through the Medicaid system, and then increasingly, at some point, we have to shift that to chronic care when the person can't be at home anymore. And you've experienced some issues that people ought to be aware of.
Well, yeah, so a little information can do a lot of harm. And when we are teaching people about how the law works, and when we're on the radio or we're doing our seminars and we say, hey, great news, there's this thing called community Medicaid, and you can get care at home, and there's no look-back period. We can get you qualified for August 1st if we hustled right now. If we left the radio station right now and moved things around, August 1st, you qualify. And people hear that.
They're astonished.
That's a headline.
You're kidding. I didn't know that.
And what they do, unfortunately, sometimes is they say, oh, that means, well, I'm going to get my care at home. That's what I'm going to decide to do. I'll just wait until I need care, and then I'll figure it out. And the problem
idea.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. Number one, they give money to their kids. Not a problem in general, but they decide the way I'm going to get down to the $15,000 is I'm going to give everything to my kids, because they're going to get it anyway eventually, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'll be down to 15. I'll file the Medicaid application. What can go wrong? And the problem is that you're already in a long-term care situation. You know, you're saying I need long-term care. The leap from care at home to care in a nursing facility, not being able to have that care at home because of whatever needs you have, it's not a big leap to get through 5 years of look back, because that's what it currently is for the nursing home applications.
Right.
I want you to plan in advance for care at home, because that also means we're planning in advance for nursing home care. And what we're seeing a lot of, Harry, is a lot of people who we recently, last 24 months, last 2 years, we got them qualified for community Medicaid. We set up their trusts 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and now we're getting calls, dad's really gone downhill, mom's not the same, we're thinking nursing home. And the problem is we still have another 3 years on that look back. Right. So we're scrambling, we're doing whatever we got to do. But man, if they came in 7 years ago and set up a trust, just set up the trust.
Well, this is what planning ahead is. You can't just assume because the 5-year look back doesn't apply to home care that you aren't going to have to move to chronic care at some point. And so the planning ought to begin, more than 5 years before you're going to need home care. Then you're all set,
right?
Okay?
And Harry, people say, "Well, how am I going to know when I'm going to need home care?" Exactly.
People, just plan. Now you're way too young, but I'm not. I don't have as much energy as I did 10 years ago, okay? And I'm pretty sure in 10 years I'm going to have even less energy than I do now. It's just, there are things that are harder to do, and I'm in good shape. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't have any illnesses or anything like that. But as people age, and it's hard for me to believe that they don't know that these things are occurring. I think a lot of people, frankly, are in denial about it.
Yeah.
And that's a natural reaction to things. But it doesn't mean that you can forego planning for these things, because you're really putting so many of your life savings at risk by ignoring the fact that life progresses, and as people age, their physical health declines.
Yeah. Well, so, we are proponents of getting that long-term care plan all set up, and most of the time that may involve a Medicaid trust. Sometimes it involves life estate deeds. Sometimes it involves not much at all because of the types of assets people have, and maybe they have more qualified retirement accounts than they do other assets that Medicaid considers to be resources. But you get your ducks in a row. You get that power of attorney all set up so that your agents can move heaven and earth if need be to get you qualified down the road as well.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you got to have, for Medicaid planning, if your agent is doing Medicaid planning that involves asset transfers or creating and setting up a trust and funding it, you better be darn sure that your power of attorney has a comprehensive statutory gifting rider in it, or you're going to be dead in the water when it comes to Medicaid.
Yeah.
Medicaid has put out a bulletin, frankly, that all asset protection plans that have involved asset transfers by power of attorney agents, if that POA doesn't have a gifting rider on it, they're disallowing those transfers.
Yeah.
And because your agent doesn't have the authority. I see so many powers of attorney come into our office that are prepared by other lawyers that have the basic, you know, the basic bread and butter power of attorney powers. You can sign checks, you can file the tax returns, the usual stuff that people do. But they didn't attach a gifting rider to it. So if the person has a stroke, you can't set up a trust and put their money in a trust. That's a gift.
So you bring up a hugely important point, Harry. And for people out there, is your power of attorney okay? I don't know. You got to bring it in and we'll take a look at it. But I could, most of the time, Harry, I could tell just by the weight of the paper, right? If we're looking at five pages and those five pages were created in the last 10 years, it's
not good. It probably doesn't have a gifting rider on it. Yeah.
And we've had also a run of, like, you know, We tell people you don't go for brain surgery at a dentist's office, right? You go to a specialist for whatever you need, right? Absolutely. We've had real estate attorneys that as part of a closing for a client, they did a power of attorney for them. And our client comes in, oh, I did a power of attorney last year. Last year when they were 83 years old, they did a power of attorney, right? Yeah. Or when they were 68 years old, they did a power of attorney. And that power of attorney does not involve a gifting rider. And in my opinion, that's like malpractice because at that age, right, even at 50, I'm saying, I'm locking the door. You're going to sign something saying I told you everything about the statutory gifts rider, or you're signing it because it's that important, because it allows your agents to do every little bit of planning in advance and every little crisis plan that we have. We have a lot of tricks up our sleeve. I mean, we can't go into all of them on the radio because it's going to confuse the heck out of people. But we can't do any of that stuff if we don't have agents in place to be able to do it.
Well, and if we don't have those agents in place with a comprehensive power of attorney, we can fix it, but it involves a very expensive guardianship proceeding. We could seek guardianship of the person who doesn't have a proper power of attorney, and the court will grant us these powers. The court will give us power to do Medicaid planning, but it's very expensive.
It's expensive a couple-fold, Harry. Number one, when you do a guardianship, you yourself who are seeking to be guardian of somebody, you're hiring an attorney.
Right.
The court is appointing an attorney for the person who is allegedly incapacitated.
That's two attorneys.
Two attorneys. And if you're keeping track at home, there's one more attorney because the court designates...
Court evaluator.
A guardian ad litem. A temporary guardian to watch over the interests of this person. Evaluate this person.
Talk to their doctors. See, the law requires, the guardianship statute requires that the guardianship be as narrowly created as possible. We don't want to give the guardian more power than the alleged incapacitated person needs. And so they cobble this thing together. So there's, what, at least three lawyers here, and they're all going to get paid out of your money.
Mm-hmm.
And that assumes nobody's going to contest it.
Right. And in addition, right, if we can't do the Medicaid planning until there's a guardianship, and if a guardianship, say, it takes somewhere between 6 months and a year and a half, depending on if it's contested, let's just say, you're private paying for that nursing facility. You're not engaging in that plan for that amount of time.
Can't start the plan until you get the order approving the guardianship.
And we have to specifically ask for the guardian to have the ability to do that kind of planning as well. It's not just willy-nilly paying bills. It's doing some heavy lifting, and there's special language that needs to be in that guardianship petition.
It is.
It's a mess.
You can get emergency power. The court will sometimes grant the applicant preliminary powers to do certain things. But I can tell you, they're not going to give them any power to transfer that person's assets out of their name into a trust until all the contentious objectants have been either dismissed or the case has been settled.
Just sign a power of attorney. You don't give up any of your powers. You're giving people powers that you already have, but you keep your own powers. That original power of attorney, where does it stay? It stays in our vault. Yeah. No one's using it. No one's doing anything with your money.
Right.
You just get it done. It's a lot cheaper than a guardianship, for sure. We do have seminars coming up, Harry, and we're going to be really hitting on this aging in place, because at our client appreciation events, which were last month, we had a lot of questions from our clients about aging in place and what it covers, what it doesn't. I know Kim had a lot of questions that were in her direction at those events. And obviously at our consultations, we're always talking about it. On July 30th, it's a Tuesday, at 2 p.m., we're going to be in Kingston at the Best Western Plus, a huge, huge hotel, huge room.
That's on Washington Avenue.
Yeah, 503 Washington Avenue, exit 19, Kingston. That's at 2 p.m. on the 30th. We'll be talking about aging in place. I think it'll be myself and Kim at that one. And then a couple weeks later in the Capital Region, the week of August 12th, Monday, August 12th. So Tuesday, the 13th of August at 2 p.m., we'll be in Clifton Park at the Hampton Inn, 620 Plank Road. Following day, Wednesday, August 14th at 10 a.m., we're going to be at the Courtyard by Marriott, right next to SUNY. It's 1455 Washington Avenue in Albany. Later on that evening at 6:30 p.m., you can't get out of work and you're worried about mom and dad, we'll see you at 6:30 at the Glenn Sanders Mansion. That's 1 Glen Avenue in Scotia, New York, Wednesday, August 14th, again, 6:30 p.m. after work. And lastly, the next day, Thursday the 15th, we'll be in East Greenbush at the Holiday Inn Express at 2 p.m. That's Thursday, August 15th. If you want to reserve a seat at one of those seminars, you can call our office at 518-465-7581. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com. You can call Stacy. You can email us.
You can sign up on the website.
Sign up on the website. You go to our seminar page and click sign up, and off you go. They're unbelievable, the seminars, because it gets the juices flowing. It gets you thinking about all these different possibilities that you didn't know existed. But you got to couple that, Harry, with a 1 hour meeting with you or me or Debbie or Jane Marie, where right. we use all the details that we know, all the rules we know, and apply them to your facts.
And we're going to have, you see, at the seminars, obviously, we're just putting out general information that is generally applicable to all the various people in the room. When you come on in and you have a consultation with David, me, Debbie, Jane Marie, we're going to have in front of us a summary of your own situation, your own income, your own assets, the kinds of assets you have. And at that point, we can really have a much more meaningful discussion about how these particular programs that are available are going to apply to you and the timetable for getting things set up. So, I mean, you need to couple the seminar with the appointment. And, you know, that's a free appointment. We don't charge for those appointments, okay?
My joke, Harry, is that we charge for parking. And everyone says, how much is parking? I say, I'm kidding. We don't charge for parking either. Well, listen, we're looking for our first caller at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. Harry, you know, when I meet with clients and we're going through their trust that they're about to sign, or when we're right. talking about the possibility of them setting up elder law plan, I mentioned three things that their plan needs to include, and that if your plan doesn't include these three things, run away. And the first thing is avoiding probate. Okay, your plan we can essentially pay for the plan by the cost savings when you avoid probate and a court supervised administration of your estate. Number two, that plan's got to start protecting your assets. And in the case of community Medicaid, it could protect them immediately. And then in the case of nursing homes, we're getting that clock started. Mm-hmm. And the third thing is you got to still have control. And I know we have a caller coming in right now. I'm going to get back to these three things because it's that control element. It's the way you get qualified even for community Medicaid that ends up being really, really important in our world.
It is.
We do have a caller. Look at this. Driving down the Northway. Staying, what, 78 miles an hour, Dave?
I still can't stop laughing with Harry and his wig.
Dave Kopeck, how are you? What's going on?
Let me ask you a question. I had this asked this week, and I'm trying to figure out the reasons why you would do it. High net worth client, assets in excess of $6 million. Why would you set up a marital trust rather than two separate irrevocable trusts?
So, good question. It used to be, Harry, and you would know better than I, that when the exemptions were far lower, it was more common for people to have two trusts, have language where we're pouring things over into this trust. We have a marital trust. We have an A trust,
a
B trust.
We have a bypass trust and a marital trust.
Yeah.
Well, one reason would be if it's a second marriage.
Yep.
Another would be if the spouse doesn't want to be bothered, you know, managing assets individually, but would rather have a trustee who's one of the children or a financial person, something like that. In a $6 million estate, there's no federal estate tax issue, but there's potentially a New York state tax issue because the New York state tax level is only $5.7 million. Although next year it'll go up probably to six. It's indexed for inflation. So you disclaim assets, you disclaim $5.7 million into a bypass trust, put the other $300,000 in a marital trust, because the money in the marital trust gets added back into the second spouse's estate when he or she dies for tax purposes.
Right, and I think to Dave's point, so if it wasn't six, if it's $8 million, if it's not eight, it's $9.5 million. We do separate trusts where we're basically taking one half of the assets or selecting certain assets to be in husband's trust, certain assets to be in wife's trust, and then who gets what from that trust depends on our tax situation.
It's a lot more complicated. In large estates, we're going to have three trusts. We're going to have a marital trust A, a marital trust B, and a bypass trust. And that's because of portability. Portability exists at the federal tax level where you can take the unused spouse's $11.4 million and transfer it to the second spouse. But New York doesn't allow portability of the $5.7 million exemption. So you have to do, you know, it's kind of a reverse Q-tip election. You want to, you know,
we're getting,
but it's real complicated.
Yeah, we're getting deep into it. So Dave, I guess the answer is that sometimes we're doing one trust for the couple. Sometimes we're doing two. And all these different factors go into it.
Okay. All right.
Cool.
I'm just trying to get some clarity because Harry hit the bullseye. New York State does not mirror federal.
That's right.
Right.
Okay. All right.
We'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, we're staying in this studio for your show because it's air conditioned. Oh, I think we lost Dave.
Joe in Albany's on the line.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Hi.
Good morning.
Here's my question. Guy makes out a will, leaves his estate to his girlfriend. Girlfriend dies before he does. He never revises the will. Who gets the money?
So what? So a couple things.
There's no alternate beneficiary other than the girlfriend?
No.
All right. Question for you.
He got probably the worst attorney in America.
Oh boy. All right. Well, we don't need to share any details on that part of it. But the question I have for you, number one, is what assets are actually going through the will? Because a lot of people have a will and they think that the will is going to take care of everything.
He's got an IRA, but he's got large amounts in non-IRA accounts.
Mm-hmm. And none of those accounts have a beneficiary?
Probably not. Let's assume they don't.
I do not think they have a beneficiary.
Okay, so if they do, right, that's where those particular assets are going to go. If they don't, right, we have a provision in a will that goes to someone who predeceased. There's nothing in the will about where it goes after that person predeceases. Is that right?
Right, so
we're going to start looking at a family tree, I think.
Well, he's going to be deemed to have died intestate, that is, without a will. And the state of New York has directed where his money's going to go. So I take it he has no spouse.
He better not have
a
spouse.
I mean, he has a girlfriend. He could still have a spouse.
Oh, boy.
No, he has a brother.
He has a brother. He has no children?
No.
If he has no children, no spouse.
No parents.
Next it would go to parents who are probably dead. And so it would go out to his brothers and sisters living and dead.
I just want to be clear about something.
Yeah.
The girlfriend's family will not get the money.
No.
Unless there's a provision in the will that says the girlfriend's family gets the money, she ain't getting it. No.
Okay, because...
No, the anti-lapse statute would not pick up the girlfriend.
All right. Because I spoke to another attorney who claims the girlfriend's relative family would get the money.
No, not unless the will says to my girlfriend if she survives me, and if not, to her children. Yeah, then the girlfriend's children.
No, it doesn't say anything.
If it doesn't say anything, there's something in the will law called an anti-lapse statute. So if you leave money to your brother and your brother died and the brother had children, the anti-lapse statute would give that money to the brother's children, even if your will didn't say that. But it only applies to certain types of relatives, and she's not a relative.
Okay, next question. Same set of facts.
Oh, boy.
This is a real live person, you know, huh? This happened?
It should be a real dead person, otherwise he could change his will. But go ahead.
It's my brother. For many years I asked him to get a will, so he got a will. So this is the will he managed to find. I mean, can you imagine some attorney making up this will? I mean,
it's absolutely terrible.
It's a true story. I swear my mother.
But you're going to have to petition the court. Who's the executor named in the will?
I am.
Well, you're going to have to petition the court to probably probate the will, and then it basically be distributed as an intestate distribution.
Joe, let me tell you something.
The non-IRA money would go to his brother.
The non-IRA money will go to whoever the beneficiary is.
Right.
And if there is no beneficiary, it's going to go to his estate, all right, which means it's going to wind up going to you, and you're going to have to take all that money out within 5 years of his death.
I don't care about that.
Okay.
All right. Now, on the IRA, he names the girlfriend as his primary beneficiary.
Yeah.
He never names a secondary beneficiary.
Well, it probably, if the beneficiary predeceases the IRA account owner, then it's going to go through the estate. You have to read the IRA contract with the bank. But it probably says, like most life insurance policies do and annuities, if the beneficiary is dead, it goes back to the estate unless there's an alternate contingent beneficiary.
Okay, so if there is no alternate contingent beneficiary and the girlfriend dies before...
It will go to brothers and sisters.
Right. I'll tell you in all honesty, I spoke to another attorney. He claimed the girlfriend's heirs would get the money.
Well, I'd have to read the will, but given what you said, I don't think that's correct.
So, Joe, here's what you do, okay? You call 518-465-7581, and you set up a estate administration consultation. We do those as well. They're free as well. And what we would do in advance of that is send you a checklist of items for you to prepare and gather, and then you'd bring everything in, and you bring in whatever you got on the IRA and whatever you have on the will and whatever you have on these accounts and those accounts, and we'll take a look and we'll tell you what is supposed to happen, and then if you want us to help you do it, we could help you do it. But it's complicated, and it's not suitable for radio solutions, let's put it that way.
You get the basic fact that if, as I said, the girlfriend died before he did, and he never revised the will, it would go to his heirs and not her heirs.
As a general proposition, that is correct. But without reading the will, I can't give you a guarantee on that.
Thanks for the call, Joe. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
And Dave and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm over at Corporate Woods. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs, New York, and Kingston, New York. We are here with this the second portion of our Herzog Law Firm Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. And we welcome your calls.
Yeah.
This half hour. Hopefully you're largely staying indoors today with the heat. This morning, not wicked horrible this morning, but boy, by this afternoon, it's supposed to get really, really dangerously unpleasant.
Yeah, if your air conditioning is broken, there are two extra seats in here, so I'm sure Dave would like extra company in the next hour. So come on down to the station.
Well, no, you actually said, Ben, that weren't some people, the buildings were being opened? Was that New York City? They were opening cool places where people could go?
Well, there's
air-conditioned apartments?
In Albany, there's places, public libraries are open up and things like that for people to go to. A lot of the state parks are open longer hours, like Grafton Lakes and stuff like that for extra up in Saratoga. At the Victoria Pools, they're open later. Moreau, the state park, they're open later. So, yeah, there's places you can go. You can always go to the mall, go to the movies, whatever. So,
yeah, we're
I prefer your local radio station, this personally. So,
I think Mr. Moreau, you really appreciate that.
Yeah, probably not.
So,
probably
not. Before the break and before the calls, I mentioned these three things that really any elder law plan really needs to take care of: avoiding probate, protecting assets, and then you, the client, still maintaining control over assets. And the reason why I want to bring that up is because a little information does a lot of harm sometimes. And when we tell people there's no look-back period for community Medicaid, and when we tell people Medicaid's not going to look to see, well, where did that money go before you applied for community Medicaid? There's no look-back period. People are tempted to say, well, I know you're saying we should do a trust, but you know what? We're going to save a couple grand. We're going to give it to our kids. They'll hold on to it for us because then we'll still qualify. And I like control. Harry, I think you like control. Ben, I'm pretty sure you like control. Everybody likes...
We all like control.
Yeah.
Sure. You like to control your own stuff.
Yeah. You got to control your stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. You set up a trust because whatever goes into that trust is in the trust.
Right.
Who's the boss of the trust? Well, you are. Well, you're not the trustee, but you're still the boss. You could fire people. You could hire people. You're running the show. But where does it really come into effect? Well, a couple of things. There's some tax impacts when you give things outright to your kids as opposed to putting it in a trust where you really would want to prefer a trust. We won't get into that because it gets a little complicated. But if at some point you need a nursing home, Harry Miller, and you haven't gone through those 5 years, we need to be able to access some, if not all, of those monies, those assets, to undo transfers, to do gift and loan plans, what have you. And the best way to do it is to do a trust. There's no way around it. That is the best way to do it because you still maintain your control. You still are the income beneficiary of your assets. You can still buy and sell whatever's in the trust.
It's the hardest concept to get across to folks, that they're still driving the train, even though their son or daughter or nephew is the trustee. They control indirectly the activities of the trustee. And, you know, these things have been litigated. So it's...
My favorite question, Harry, is, but wait a minute, you said it's an irrevocable trust. It's like, yes, but irrevocable doesn't mean what you would think it means. So at seminars, Harry, I say, all right, what does irrevocable mean? Yell it out. And people say you can't change it.
You can't
undo it. And they're wrong.
And you know what happens, Dave? Here's what happens. They come in and they say, oh, well, I went to the bank. The branch manager at the bank told me I can't get any of my money ever. Or their financial advisor. My financial advisor said, do you know what this trust is? Your daughter's a trustee, and you can't get your... I said, where did your financial advisor go to law school?
With all due respect to Ben here...
They're giving you legal advice. They ought to be managing your stock portfolio and your investments and stay out of stuff they don't know anything about.
Harry, imagine if I went to the doctor and said, listen, I talked to Ben on Saturday. He said I need shoulder surgery. He told me. He said it because,
I know.
My arm's not moving this way, and he said it's got to be surgery.
Got to be a rotator cuff.
There's a financial company in our building. On their advertisement, on the TV set in the lobby, it says they do estate planning. No, they don't. They can't prepare legal documents.
What
there's not a single
nerve.
Lawyer in
what
that
nerve.
Company.
Unbelievable.
All right? They're stockbrokers. I'm sorry.
there are terms that are used very loosely, and you need an estate planning attorney, someone who does trust and estates law. You need an elder law attorney, someone who does elder law. Now, people can be Look, I don't do investments, but I can tell you right now the best advice ever, you buy low, you sell high. Done.
Right, right? There you go.
I can't say I'm a financial planner or advisor. That's a good advice, I promise you. But I can't hold myself out to be that.
No, our malpractice insurance doesn't cover us for financial advice.
Although that's darn good,
you know,
advice.
It doesn't. We never give out financial advice, believe me.
But the point is, you want the people who know the whole story, all the facts, all the rules, mm-hmm. because that's right. at the end of the day what applies. You know, we every 2 weeks in the office, we have a meeting where everyone who touches a Medicaid file, whether it's paralegals or attorneys, we all get together. And we're exchanging ideas and saying, hey, this is what I'm dealing with on that fact pattern. This is, what do you think I should do here? Have you heard of this thing? Mm-hmm. Our three Medicaid paralegals used to work for the Department of Social
Service.
They're
all former employees in chronic care evaluation at various county social services departments. They have extensive experience, and they've been working, I mean... One of them's been there, I don't know, 15, 16 years, and another's probably gone up on 6 or 8. You know, they have a wealth of experience, and
it's the equivalent
because we do so much of it.
It's the equivalent of saying, "All right, I'm gonna go use meet with an accounting firm where half the people used to be IRS auditors."
Right.
Okay. Uh-huh. It's just that level of experience. We have a bunch of fair hearings we're doing where. That's an opportunity where you can challenge a determination from the Department of Social Service. We applied for Medicaid. They said that something is not exempt, or they say that this needs to be included, or you don't qualify, or what have you. And we have an opportunity to fight it in front of an administrative judge. And they're all novel issues. They are things that...
Well, trust me, the county social service department does occasionally make a mistake.
Yeah.
In fact, Dave was talking about one issue, I believe, the other day, Friday. You know, we have a Medicaid department meeting every 2 weeks, and there's one issue that it doesn't matter which county it is, but they're dead in the water on their position.
Greene County.
And in order to save the client money to go through this whole fair hearing process, because it's, you know, it costs a few bucks to do that, we've intervened and tried to get someone at the state level, social services, to tell them they're wrong.
Yeah.
So they drop the thing, and we save the client a couple of thousand dollars not having to do the fair hearing. This is the kind of stuff we're able to do. We're not always successful, but we have access to information and people, and sometimes we can help them out.
You hear that, Greene County? That's right. Okay, sorry. Anyway, we're looking for our first caller of the second half here, 518-476-5900.
Okay, so I'm going to have, since Kopech's listening, I'm going to have some razz. I'm going to have some razz with Kopech because I found this website the other day looking through something or other, and it was just struck me as hilarious. The Rolling Stones are doing a summer tour throughout the United States.
Yes, they are.
You know the Rolling Stones. Jagger just got out of the hospital. He had heart surgery. I don't know, they put a stent in him, or he was bypassed. And he's, you know, these 75-year-old guys are prancing around on stage all over the country. And guess who the sole sponsor of the Rolling Stones summer tour is?
Dave Kopech?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
It's Come the on. Alliance for Lifetime Income.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is a lobbying organization for the annuity industry.
Hey,
and
smart.
If you go on their website... You will find a big red Mick Jagger tongue. Remember, that's their symbol. Mm-hmm. And underneath that, it says, you can get what you need when you have an annuity.
Oh, my goodness.
So I just thought it was hilarious that a bunch of guys who were up there singing 50 years ago about sex, drugs, and rock and roll are now promoting annuities because they're so old.
I was going to say Keith Richards is rolling in his grave, but he's still alive, so I can't say that.
He's still alive. Brian Jones, the only one who died a long time ago.
It's product placement. Very smart. Absolutely very smart. We do have aging.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
It is pretty brilliant. Dave, you can get back on the road. Okay, here we go.
So he's probably left.
We do have a seminar schedule coming up. Topic is aging in place. We don't do it very often. We're doing it because we had so many questions at our client appreciation events and actually a lot of misinformation that those questions showed. People just didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, July 30th, down in Kingston at 2 p.m. We'll be at the Best Western Plus. It's 503 Washington Avenue down in Kingston, right off of exit 19. August 13th, so a couple weeks later in the Capital Region, Tuesday, August 13th at 2 p.m. we'll be in Clifton Park at the Hampton Inn, 620 Plank Road. Following day at 10 a.m., we'll be at the Courtyard by Marriott in Albany. That's 1455 Washington Avenue. It's the one that's right across from SUNY. Later on that evening, and that's the one that I'm putting a little asterisk on, 6:30 p.m., Harry. So we have a lot of children who come in for mom and dad.
It's a great idea to bring one of your kids with you to one of these seminars. And, you know, other than the dead of winter, we try to do an one evening seminar every month that we do seminars. It's just an extra pair of ears, an extra pair of questions, you know, an extra brain to think of things that you might want to know about.
This topic is usually the one where it's brother and sister come together, and then you end up saying something, and one of them kind of elbows the other one, like, hey, did you hear that one? That's what we got to talk about.
Right.
That's going to be on Wednesday, the 14th of August at 6:30 p.m. at Glenn Sanders Mansion in Scotia. And then the following day, Thursday, the 15th at 2 p.m. will be in East Greenbush at the Holiday Inn Express. That's 8 Empire Drive. You can always go to our website, herzoglaw.com, to register. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com or call the office, 518-465-7581. It's not a dog and pony show. The point of it is getting information to you. Okay, there's a lot of details, and we'll slowly get into those different details and different options. Our geriatric care manager, Kim Hansel, will be there as well. But there's no substitute, I'm telling you, there's no substitute for an hour where you use our expertise and we apply to your facts. So if you can't make those dates and times, call our office, set up an appointment with one of us in one of the three offices. This is what we do. I think we're pretty darn good at it.
Yeah. This is big bucks we're talking about, folks. I mean, the nursing homes in the Capital District are $500 a day currently. I had a client in this week whose father is in a nursing home out in Amsterdam in Montgomery County, and I think it was only $380. And he was outraged. I said, Jesus, that's a pretty good rate these days, $380, because around here, anything in Albany, Rensselaer, or Saratoga is $500 a day. So that's $15,000 a month that a family is going to spend private pay for a nursing home. So, I mean, a short-term, I'm sorry, but today, 6 or 7 months of private pay in a nursing home is going to run up to $100,000. It's staggering. The cost of these places, particularly in relationship to the amount of care that you get. But that's what they cost. And unfortunately, nobody really wants to have to do that. But there are occasionally situations where we can't avoid having someone go to a nursing home. It's difficult. And it's also, you know, getting someone who needs 24-hour care qualified for home care is not the easiest thing to accomplish. Okay, if you need 6, 8, 10 hours a day, yeah, that's doable. 24/7 is hard, and it not only hard to get it approved from a care standpoint, but even if you're approved, it's hard to staff 24-hour home care for an individual upstate. You know, easier downstate.
So that's one of those things where the headline, people read the headlines, they don't read the article, right? They read there's no look back period for community Medicaid, so they don't plan. They read or they hear my neighbor's friend's cousin got 24/7 care at home, and they think that's what they're going to get. And that's just not how, that's the anomaly, right? It's far more frequent to get 10 or fewer hours a day, which is a lot of hours. It really is a lot of hours if you think about it.
It is.
To 24/7, if that's what you're going to rely on, you need a better plan. You need to start to get the clock ticking just in case, because it's not going to happen.
Well, you have to understand that once you're approved for home care, you know, that's not the managed long-term care company that manages the program for the county and the state. They actually come and visit you once a month, okay? And I happen to know this because one of my family members is on community Medicaid receiving home care in her apartment. And the managed long-term care representative meets my wife and the person at at the apartment every month. They are constantly reevaluating, A, that you still need the number of hours they've approved. And then if you decline, you can get approved for more hours. But there is regular follow-up on the hours that are granted and the fact that you actually need them.
Absolutely. Oh. Couple thoughts, Harry, that I had. So I tend to get a lot of younger clients, just friends of friends, that kind of thing.
And you're a young guy. Why not?
Yeah, I'm a younger guy. So, you know, people who have... minors, as you know,
minor children,
and it's really important that they have a will, and it's not because they're gonna die real soon, but it's because they might, and if they ever did, their worst case scenario is not having rules about how their kids get money. Their worst case scenario is having their kids get money at 18 years old and doing who knows what with it. And
it's the terrible age for a kid to come into a good chunk of money
with no parents
and
along the way.
We live in a dangerous world. Look to your right there. There's a poster sitting in the studio here. Is what to do in the event of an active shooter. Okay, this is the new normal. This is what happens because you could go to the movies, you could walk into a shopping mall any day of the week, and be involved in some random act of shooting violence. It's the new normal in the United States. But you got to plan. It's random.
Look, if you have a kid, you're an adult. You got to act like an adult. You have to have documents like an adult. A power of attorney, health care proxy, and a will. And that will mention guardians, but also should have a provision that everything, you know, everything goes to spouse, and then everything goes to my issue, my kids. And then another separate paragraph, maybe a couple pages of, but not until age blank, but give them money for blank, and don't give them for this, and do it for this. But that's not enough. Do the will, right? But then you need to go call your insurance company, life insurance, and say, hey, my contingent benefit, my backup is no longer my two kids that are 2 and 6.
Right.
My backup's going to be my own estate. And a lot of times people kind of give us a look because we're essentially promoting them going through probate. Mm-hmm. But that's just a means to get to the rules. Obviously, the better alternative is to create a revocable trust.
Create a trust.
Sometimes they're not ready to spend that money, though.
I understand that. Young people especially, yes. But but the planning has to go on. You'd be surprised how many adults with minor children have put the minor children on as contingent beneficiaries of things like life insurance or IRAs. And they have their two kids who are 15 and 12 as the contingent beneficiaries. They have the spouse as the primary and the two minor kids as secondary. You have created a mess for your estate by doing that.
Can I tell you what's even worse than that? I've seen a bunch.
Yeah.
Their backup is mom. Their backup is their brother, because their brother is going to take care of their kids. Mm-hmm. But you know what happens? That money belongs to your brother. Your kids don't have any interest in it. I like the idea. I want you to have words that say your brother can control some money for the kids, but it's got to be the kids' money in trust.
And it's going into a trust that can only be used for the kids, not for your brother.
And naming mom, well, mom is older than you, by definition, a lot older than you, right? She's going to deal with 5-year look back. You know, Medicaid's not going to look at it and say, oh, this money that you inherited from your son, that was geared towards your grandkids? Oh, yeah, don't worry about it. They're going to say it's in your name.
We rarely want to pass assets upstream, usually downstream. And if we want to take care of a mother or a father, you know, who needs the money, perhaps, we want to park it in some kind of a trust that doesn't impact your money if they have to go into a nursing home in the future or have tax implications if you happen to have a large estate. But, you know, this is just an example of the kinds of issues that regularly come up when we sit down with clients and discuss their particular situation. Because they've already done this, you know.
Yeah.
They already have a $100,000 life insurance policy. They've already accumulated $50,000 or $100,000 in a 401k plan. You know, they have some joint accounts. They got a house. And they have nothing. They have two minor kids, and they don't even have a will naming a guardian.
They've already contemplated the idea of not being around forever because they've named beneficiaries on stuff.
Yeah.
And they life. But somehow, it's just this mental block where when you go that, and this is not just for people with minor kids, this is for people who are in their 60s and 70s.
Right.
They have these beneficiaries, but they never get around to doing that estate plan because it's too morbid. Oh, my goodness. You just change your beneficiary and your life insurance. Life insurance is not for you living forever. I mean, it's just, you know, one thing I got to say about this sign about...
It says, I can't read it from where I'm sitting. You're right in front of me.
Well, so it also says in the event of a bomb threat, but the bomb picture they use, at some point they got to change the bomb picture. It's like a Rocky and Bullwinkle ball with a wick coming out of it.
Oh, yeah. Like Boris and Natasha?
I don't know if they make Boris bombs and like that anymore, but...
Boris Badenoff and Natasha
If you see
Patel.
One of those, they'll run, for sure.
Spy versus Spy, Mad Magazine. Did you see, I think I bought it, but this month is the last print issue of Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
I'm devastated.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Alfred E. Newman.
What? Times change. So I was listening in the car before we came in, and Ben was mentioning different birthdays, and he mentioned tomorrow's Robin Williams' birthday. He would have been 68.
He would have been in his 60s.
Yeah.
So.
50, I think he said 51.
So 68. Yep, 68.
You didn't mention a couple people, though. So today is the birthday of Carlos Santana.
Wow.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, 72 years old today. Tomorrow, Cat Stevens.
He's older than I am.
Well, not
so is
by
Mick
much.
Jagger. Mick Jagger.
But I wanted to just mention Robin Williams because recently, in the last month or two, there was a settlement in his estate, and he had by all accounts a really good plan. He had trust set up, things like that, but you know, he had different spouses at different times, different children, and the personal property became a huge issue.
He had a lot of that was a big issue, his, and frankly his memorabilia probably has a significant value.
Yeah. So the reason why I wanted to bring him up is not because our clients have millions of dollars of memorabilia from their Hollywood careers, but because our trusts usually are holding financial assets and houses and things like that, and we still will always end up doing a will for people that kind of pours into the trust. And the question I get all the time, Harry, is, well, what happens to my personal property? And if my will says I want this to go here and that to go there, in order for that to matter, for that document to mean anything, you got to go through probate. So I say, well, you know what's important is you let people know what you want. You do maybe a side letter that says, I want this to go here, I want this to go there. And if it's really super important that things happen, certainly we can put those in your documents and memorialize them. But we like to maybe informally do so, because that way we don't have to probate a will, and it's very clear to people what you wanted. But the other option you could do, you could always give things during your life, or say, you know, I give this painting to Harry Miller, but Harry, thanks for letting me use it for the rest of my life on my kitchen wall. That's a transfer, right? You gave it. You don't own it anymore.
You could transfer it. You could retain a life interest in a piece of personal property, yes.
So
people often do that with works of art. If they want a current deduction, you could donate a work of art to a museum, but retain the right to hang it in your living room until you die. And then you could get a current, you could value the remainder based on life expectancy tables and probably take a charitable contribution deduction for it, for part of it.
Yeah, a lot of people think that they need to put every little item that they have in their documents, and we typically will advise them not to, unless they are sensing there's going to be a big fight between kids.
And if there is, you have to make a list. And the will would say, I may leave a letter or a memorandum. It's a precatory request, so it's technically not legally binding. But we could make it legally binding. So I may leave a list or a memorandum of certain items of tangible personal property that I want to leave to certain people. And I direct my executor to carry out those provisions. And in fact, one time, this is years ago, 25 years ago probably, I was involved in a estate where there was a dispute about personal property. The person had made a list. And although it said it was a precatory means it's not legally binding. It's an expression of your desire, but without intending it to be legally binding on anyone. When there was this dispute, and I told the surrogate at the time there was a list, the surrogate asked us to file the list along with the will, and they made everybody on that list get what they were supposed to get, and that settled the dispute. They treated it as part of the will, even though technically it wasn't.
It may not always end up that way. I know you had an estate not too long ago where two sisters were fighting with their brother, and it did. One of the sticking points towards the end was one of Mom's sweaters.
Yeah, it was
that
an
the
Irish
son wanted.
Knit sweater
that the son wanted.
Yes,
I don't think it was going to fit him.
It was a woman's sweater, first of all, and the client told me it wouldn't fit his wife because it's too big. She was very petite. It was all about fighting with the sisters. I mean,
yeah,
it goes back sometimes
symbolism
to when they were kids and they didn't like each other from the get go. And now Mom or Dad isn't there to put them in time out, you know, and they revert to their childhood angers and frustrations and things. And I don't know why it is, but I can tell you in that particular estate, if you added up all the value of all the personal property that Mom had, I'm quite sure it was worth less than $5,000. And I know for a fact that both the executor and the brother spent more than $5,000 in legal fees fighting about that stuff. It finally got resolved.
I remember, Harry,
he didn't get the sweater.
In the days where I did far more matrimonial matters, I remember being in outside of the judge's chambers in Saratoga County where we're saying to the judge with a straight face that the two clients can have not reached a resolution because of a TV, where the time it took for two attorneys to be going back and forth with their clients because they can't be in the same room and they don't want to see each other.
You need three conference rooms in those cases, one for the wife and her lawyer, one for the husband.
They could have bought two brand new TVs.
Sure.
And instead they fought about the TV. That's just sometimes how it is. And you want documents that kind of take care of things, but we don't want to go overboard. We don't want to need to probate a will just for personal property. That's a huge waste of resources in that moment.
Well, you don't need to unless there's a fight about it. Then you would.
Right.
Then you would.
So,
and it rarely happens, but occasionally it does. Sounds like we're out of time. Anyway, have a great weekend.
Stay cool.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.